started in the interest of time, everybody's time. We know we're all so busy. And I just wanted to first and foremost thank you all for making time out of your busy day to come and spend a little bit of your morning with us. We appreciate it. In case I haven't met you yet, my name is Christine Nicole. I'm one of the associate superintendents for school leadership. And basically, because I support the nursing department or health services and the counseling department, and I have the joy of being here with you today. So we're going to start off with some meeting norms, which are pretty self-explanatory. I'll give you a minute to glance over there. Those. Just remember to check your cell phone and make sure it's off. And then this is our agenda for today. We have nutrition services here. They're going to talk to us a little bit. We also are going to spend a little time talking about physical activity and fitness planning as well. But we also have Franklin here, and we're going to talk a little bit about a lesson that is going to be shared with students. The parents often about fentanyl, and just talk about the importance of fentanyl. It's actually a law. That came into law this year when the 88th legislative session that requires it to bring it to our students. Again, the purpose of this committee, it is required, but we feel it's a great opportunity to get input from our community and our stakeholders and to make sure that what we're doing also reflects the values of the community. We also make board recommendations to the Board of Trustees. All right, so let's just, before I go through this entire agenda, let's just kind of take a break here. Let's stop here, and I'm going to kick it over to Franklin to kind of talk us through the lesson.
Hey, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
As Christina shared, I'm Franklin Sampson, the Director of Guidance and Counseling, and we're here today to kind of talk about fentanyl as well as our opioid antagonists. So we'll share a little bit. We have our LCDC who's present today, and we have one LCDC licensed chemical dependency counselor for our district at this time, and she's going to share a little bit about some of the research as well as some of our plans as it relates to fentanyl awareness. The presentation that you'll see today will only be given to those students on the secondary level, so only 6th through 8th graders will receive a copy of this presentation. So without further ado, I'm going to let Veronica come up, and then afterwards you guys will have an opportunity to ask any questions that you may have. All right, let's roll. You can go ahead.
All right, so this is a lesson that we intend to share, like Franklin said, on the secondary level. So I'm going to walk you through that, fentanyl poisoning awareness. Some talking points that you'll see during the presentation is right off the bat, why are we discussing opioids? What is fentanyl? What are some signs of overdose? As well as some mental health and substance use resources that are out there in the community. We have several activities that are part of this lesson, and that includes a few different videos, which we'll see today. And then there's a little bonus there with the quiz that the DEA has specifically for students. Okay, so let's get going. Let me see if my video will. My video disappeared.
Okay. Houston, illegal fentanyl has made its way into the drug supply. A synthetic opioid up to 50 times stronger than heroin, up to 100 times stronger than morphine. It only takes the tiniest amount to cause a fatal overdose. Although fentanyl is being mixed into almost every kind of drug, you wouldn't be able to see it, smell it, or taste it. Know the dangers. Learn the facts about fentanyl at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
So it's a quick little video to help students understand why we would be discussing this. It's important to know the signs of overdose, because fentanyl is not something that you can see or taste. So it's important to know that so you know what you're looking at.
The drug?
Now it works, okay. So according to the CDC, 107,000 people died of a drug overdose in 2021. Of those deaths, 75% involved an opioid. On average, it kills about 150 Americans every single day. I've seen numbers as high as 190 deaths a day attributed to overdoses. Opioid overdoses. So here's a little graph from the CDC. Let me stand over here. And you can see the upward trend of the overdose deaths across the years, really spiking in 2017, again in 2019. That's kind of where we just kept going way up. This was the first year in 2021 where we had this many deaths due to a drug overdose. In 2023, the DEA seized more than 46.4 million fentapills, which is the new term for pills that have fentanyl in them. They're made illicitly, so they're not something you find at your pharmacy, and more than 6,900 pounds of fentanyl powder. Okay. This is equivalent to about 204 million deadly doses. Just in 1 year, this is how much the DEA seized. So as you can see, we've been hearing more and more about this in the news. There's probably daily, there's articles out there about people that are dying or that came across something with fentanyl and had to come to the hospital or had some kind of adverse reaction. And so this helps us see, again, why we're talking about it. It is now the leading cause of death in people ages 18 to 45. Drug overdose is now the leading cause of death for people 18 to 45. So what are opioids? The CDC defines opioids as something that helps, it's a medication that helps reduce the feelings of pain and increase feelings of calmness and happiness, right? It is a Schedule II drug. So it's there are four or five different schedules. This is Schedule II, meaning that there is a high potential for abuse, but it still has some kind of a medical use to it. And it can lead to severe dependence. So a drug that's on a level one has an even higher potential for abuse, and it can lead to dependence much faster versus one of the lower levels. Opioids are broken down into three different categories. We've got the naturally occurring opioids, so this would be morphine or codeine. So these come from what y'all know about the poppy plant. Like, that's kind of where these come from. They occur naturally in the planet. When we talk about the semi-synthetic, now we are taking something that was once a natural opioid, and we've combined and done some things in a lab and come up with a medication such as oxycodone, hydrocodone, okay? The synthetic are 100% made in the lab. So this is where we find fentanyl. Fentanyl falls here, as well as tramadol. It's made in the lab, it's 100% synthetic. There's no naturally occurring fentanyl out there in the planet, okay? How do they work? So what happens is the opioids bind to the receptor sites in the brain. They mimic our natural opioid receptors in the brain, neurotransmitters, connect there, and they start blocking the pain and increasing those feelings of calm and just happiness. Okay, so you can see in this picture, that's what the synapses look like in our brain. You have the neurotransmitter come in, which are those little polka dots that are floating around in there, and then they park, okay? So you can see the pain is blocked off because the opioids are there and they're blocking that message of pain from happening. So you just don't get it at all. Okay. I want to take a second to look at the difference between tolerance and dependence and addiction, right? Because these are words that are sometimes used interchangeably, but they're a little bit different. So tolerance happens when you're taking a medication and your same dose that you're taking two of whatever medication. Over time, those two pills may not do the same thing in your body. Because it's like steady flowing in your brain gets the signal that, hey, we don't need to make this chemical anymore. We've got those, we got that coming in all the time. So we can slow down and ease up on the production of that transmitter. In order to feel the same level of euphoria that you would feel when you first took those two pills, you have to take more. Okay, so that's that tolerance, that threshold increases. Dependence occurs when you start having symptoms of withdrawal. So for whatever reason, you stop taking the medication, you go into withdrawals. For opioids, withdrawals look like your body's just leaking from everywhere you can think of. You're in a lot of pain because for the longest time you've had no sensation, no messages of pain at all. And in order to trigger your body to make those neurotransmitters again, your body has to feel pain. So it's trying to regulate itself. So dependence, that's when you start to notice the dependence. Those symptoms of withdrawal kick in when you stop. And you need to take this medication to feel just normal. We're not even talking about a high, just normal. I think I'm missing a slide here. Yeah, sorry about that. These are supposed to be switched. So addiction happens. You've got the dependence, right? Your body goes into withdrawals. We call it an addiction when it starts interfering in multiple levels and aspects of your life, whether that is school, whether that's work, your interpersonal relationships with people start being affected, and you may or may not notice that happening, right? So that is what technically is an addiction. And it can happen to anyone. This is something I always say. It's equal opportunity. Addiction can happen to any person, no matter what. So it's important for us to learn about that, right? When we talk about the short-term and the long-term effects of opioid use, here are some things to look for. In the short term, you know, you don't have any pain, so you might have started this because you hurt your back or you hurt your shoulder doing an activity, and so these pains help you move on with your life without feeling that pain. They cause feelings of calm and happiness. They can cause sleepiness or drowsiness, some confusion happening. This is very important. Your breathing slows, right? So they kind of come back here into your central nervous system and start slowing it down, which is, we'll talk about that when we look at the overdoses, okay? Nausea, vomiting, constipation. Long-term effects of this, we have the addiction as a possibility in there. You can have heart infections, lung infections, muscle pain. Remember I said withdrawals, lots of pain? You can see it here, right? You've got the muscle pain. And sometimes that can be long-lasting or just for the rest of your life. It's really hard to tell when we're talking about our brain. Bowel dysfunction, uncomfortable muscle or uncontrollable muscle movement. So you've been so calm for a while, your brain's trying to regulate, you may have some kind of jerkiness happen. Sleep disorders, abnormal pain sensitivity, so that threshold has changed. Kidney and liver problems, okay? So let's watch this video. This is 2 minutes, 59 seconds. It's thinking. It's trying. At least it's there. Did we lose signal? It says reconnecting.
Yeah. It's just move forward.
Yeah. Okay. I'll just keep moving. So the video just does a really good job of explaining everything that I just did. It's a good way, I guess, to hear it. I want them to hear it in, from multiple different places, different types of media. The video does a really good job at that and explaining those facts in ways that kids and students can understand. Okay, so we'll move forward.
fentanyl is 100%, like I said, synthetic opioid. It's made in the lab. It can come in a powder, a liquid, or even a patch form. It is odorless and tasteless. Have you guys heard of the patch form of fentanyl before? Yeah, some of you have. Okay, so typically the patch is made for people that are undergoing chemo. They have a lot of pain. They're cancer patients. And it's interesting, I learned that you have to go through different types of drugs before you can get access to the opioid or the fentanyl patch. So even then, when someone does have access to it, it's very highly regulated and monitored to help because of that potential for abuse that's there. So 50 times stronger than heroin, 100 times stronger than morphine. It's found in, is it gonna work? Okay, here we go.
Fentanyl is an opioid that's at least 50 to 100 times more potent than heroin, which is a very potent opioid. And because it's such a potent opioid, fentanyl can kill within minutes, particularly for teenagers who may have never been exposed to an opioid before and have no tolerance built up. And it's especially risky when it gets mixed with other substances. It just really heightens the risk of overdose.
The drug cartels are able to synthesize synthetic fentanyl quite quickly in these makeshift labs. And we're not talking about the medical grade pharmaceutical lab where it's clean and it's regulated and it's accurately dosed. We're talking about metal tubs out in the wilderness with shovels mixing. And so by the time it comes to you, it might look real, but it is really very dangerous.
With illicit fentanyl, you don't know how much you're using, and frequently it is combined with another drug, whether it's contaminating heroin or contaminating cocaine. It's mixed drug use, which is extremely dangerous and difficult to treat in the ER.
Producers of illicit drugs who supply the black market for street drugs have shifted away from plant-based products like, for instance, heroin to synthetic chemicals like fentanyl. It makes these drugs extremely profitable, and this changes everything.
Fentanyl is so potent that it takes such an exceedingly small amount, on the order of really a grain of sand, the tip of a pencil, to potentially be lethal.
It's been approved for what we call analgesia, or pain, for over 50 years in the United States, and it's been used effectively and safely for general anesthesia, for conscious sedation, and in end-of-life care for patients, for instance, with cancer. But when I give you fentanyl in the operating room, several differences. One, it's through a very closely calibrated, a very quantifiable amount. And we're talking about micrograms. When it's used illicitly, we're in the milligrams. So there's 1,000 micrograms in a milligram. So it's a huge difference in the quantity. Also, I'm monitoring every breath you take, every heartbeat, your blood pressure, your oxygen levels, beat to beat to beat, because the way that opioids are killing people is because it's actually stopping them from breathing. And as you know, if you're not breathing, you're not getting oxygen to your heart, to your brain, to all of your life-sustaining organs.
I mean, you don't even know what is in the drugs that you're about to consume. I mean, it could be your last time using. Even if it's your first time using, it could be your last. You know, that's the scary reality now.
Fentanyl really is getting and permeating all kinds of drugs that are out there. They talked about it being mixed into meth, cocaine, just find it on, sprinkled onto marijuana. Like, it's just out there. It's odorless, so it's able to sneak in without alarming anybody. It is extremely potent. I don't know if y'all caught that. It's equivalent to, like he said, a grain of sand. Right? According to the DEA, 2 to 3 milligrams is a potentially fatal dose, and that's about two grains of salt. Okay. I wish they had shown a picture, and I didn't put one in here, of the labs that the DEA is coming in and breaking apart. And this is like they're saying in the jungle, in tub with cement mixers, mixing the stuff together before they put it into pill presses. And then you get that product that looks almost identical to a real medication. This is it right here. This is a lethal dose of fentanyl. Okay. The issue, like I was saying, with those labs is, and they touched on this on the video, is that it's not something that's measurable. They're not really aware of how much is going into this pill that I take versus this other pill that I take, and maybe I bought them both at the same place. So it's very, very dangerous. There are no systems in place for this. Here are some fake pills versus real pills, just to show you the idea of what we're looking at. When people say they can tell the difference, even our highly trained, law enforcement are unable to tell the difference until they've gotten that pill into the lab and they tested it to see what the makeup is of that specific pill. You can see down here the Xanax bars. You have an authentic Xanax, which is in the white, the fake ones in the yellow. You would think like the color, oh yeah, I can tell with the color. Well, some of them are white too, you know, or they might be rainbow colored. 6 out of 10 fake pills. This is on based on the DEA's numbers of pills that they seized. 6 out of 10 pills are actually fake and have a lethal dose of fentanyl in them. A lethal dose of fentanyl, 6 out of 10. So if someone is buying a pill, fake pill from somebody, from a, you know, a drug deal, they have 6 out of 10 chances that it's going to have a lethal dose. That could be the deadly pill. You can see the Adderall, the differences in Adderall right there, the authentic one on the left, the fake one on the right, and then the Oxys at the bottom. They look very, very similar. It's hard to tell the difference by looking at them. So again, highlighting that 6 out of 10, just sit and think about that number, 6 out of 10, right? And let's see if this one will work for us.
I'm a senior research chemist with the Drug Enforcement Administration, also known as the DEA. So a counterfeit pill would be one that looks just like a legitimate pill, something you'd get from a pharmacist. We cannot visually look at a pill and say, oh, that's counterfeit or not. You really don't know until you do the analysis. I have never seen more fentanyl than I'm seeing now. It's manufactured in these dirty labs. There's no right way to measure how much goes into each tablet. When you're mixing a pill up, you have to mix all the ingredients together, and then you have to put them in the machine, and the machine will punch them out. The research suggests that 2 milligrams of fentanyl can cause an overdose. One pill can very much lead to an overdose. The danger that we see coming from these counterfeit pills is you really don't know what's in them. Fentanyl is a threat that affects everyone. The fact of the matter is, once you take that tablet, there's no going back. If it didn't come from that pharmacist, it could be counterfeit. It could end your life, impacting all your loved ones and your friends.
So the point here is that if you didn't get it from a pharmacist, there is no guarantee about what you're taking. Even if the person that gave it to you has the container for that pill, like supposedly for that pill, you still can't know because that didn't come to you specifically from your doctor, right? And so the only safe medications are those that are prescribed to you specifically for you by a doctor. Did you guys catch the labs that they were showing in there? That's not what we think about when we think about making medication, right? At all. Okay, so let's talk about overdose. Let's talk about those signs and symptoms and what to look for. What does it look for when someone is overdosing on an opioid? Okay. When you look at the pupils, they're going to be really tiny, very small and constricted, pinpoint pupils. I didn't put a picture of that because some people get grossed out by eyes. So you guys can Google that if you want to. I actually did Google, and it's a little cringy, so you can do that if you wish. But very tiny, constricted pupils, shallow breathing. They might be making some choking or gurgling sounds. They may look like they're going to sleep, but they're just kind of nodding off. Again, they're probably can hear you in the beginning stages, even though they look like they're sleeping, but that progresses rather quickly into loss of consciousness. Their body, a limp body, they're not responding to touch or movement or your voice when you're trying to wake them up. Their skin, lips, and nail beds are all blue, right? And they're cold to the touch. So these are signs to look for as you're out there in going about your day. So what can you do? First thing we have to do is call 911, right? We need someone to call 911 immediately because time matters when we're responding to an overdose. Just 4 minutes without oxygen can lead to some brain damage that can be lifelong. So time is very important here. Finding an adult, right, for, again, seeing this through the student's eyes, it's important to find an adult to give that help. If someone has Narcan, they should administer the Narcan, which is the opioid antagonist that Franklin was discussing. Lay the person on their right side. This is the recovery position in case they start to throw up. Then it reduces the chances of choking. Okay, so 911 is very important. If someone did administer Narcan, it's almost like the Narcan and 911 have to happen simultaneously. Like there really needs to be someone to call 911 because if the Narcan wears off, if the opioid antagonist wears off, which it can, then depending on how much of the opioid they still have floating around in their brain, they can go back into overdose. If you or someone you know needs help, here are some resources that we have. They're free. Anyone can access these. Smart Recovery. So they have free meetings. They have discussion boards on there. You know, our teens nowadays don't really like that face-to-face conversation. They prefer the chatting or messaging, and so they have that as an option on there. And they're all facilitated by trained volunteers. All of those discussion and meetings are led by trained volunteers, and they have a toolbox for recovery. So if someone is trying to get sober or trying to stay healthy, they have a lot of resources there that, again, are free for them to access. Now, this resource is available for teens as well as adults. TCHAT counseling is a program that we have access to in our district. It's free counseling specifically for substance use disorders. They also offer counseling for other reasons, but they have a division specifically for this. And they offer 10 to 12 sessions, again, for free. They do virtual counseling as well as in-person counseling. It's just up to the family and what meets their needs. And then for solely the mental health side of things, we have 988, which is our new crisis line number. So before it was a really long 1-800 number, the suicide prevention hotline, this is that new number, 988, okay? So that's always there and available. Okay, and that's it.
And that number is also on the back of every student's badge, the 988 number. So thanks to Darren, thanks to Scott and a few others who assist us with that every year. House Bill 3098 is the bill that requires us to give this training to all of our secondary students. There's also going to be a fentanyl poisonous awareness week that will take place. The governor will note which week that will be specifically. Hasn't been done up to this point, but as soon as it is, we will definitely share even more information during that week, similar to like Red Ribbon Week that you guys are pretty familiar with. Are there any questions in regards to the presentation today? You saw one of the labs But I don't want you guys to think that the only labs are south of Texas. There are also labs in our neighborhoods. We've had presentations on those with DEA and other law enforcement agencies. We hosted parent nights in the previous years, and we'll do so. We just had one last week, and we will do our very best to continue to educate everyone on the importance of being aware of how powerful fentanyl is, and hopefully find a way to stop the numerous deaths that are taking place with those individuals 18 to 45. We also have the opioid antagonist. You may be more familiar with one of the brands, and it's called Narcan, and that's one Veronica shared. It helps to bring that person back to life, if you will. You'll also hear it called the Lazarus drug. So you may hear that, and that's just one who seemingly was looked dead, and then, of course, they're administered Narcan, and they many times pop back right back up. So, yes, ma'am.
Yep. Do they have, like, the school nurses have Narcan, or is it in?
So right now, there is, depending on the level of school, at the high school level, there's 5 doses. At the middle school level, there's 2. At the elementary, there's 1. And the nurse is one that does have, but then we also have kind of sprinkled various places throughout the campuses so that they're available.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. Thank you guys for your time.
Yes.
Next, we're going to have nutrition services come up.
All right. Hi, everyone. My name is Sierra Bell. I'm the new dietitian with CFISD. My official title is Nutrition Education and Special Diets Coordinator. Mouthful, I know. But I'm just here today to talk to you guys about some of the updates and happenings that we have going on in nutrition services. So we'll kind of get started. Sit back here with you guys. Awesome. So just an agenda, because I am scatterbrained and I will forget what I'm trying to tell you guys. We're talking about meal applications today, menu updates, harvest of the month, food quality, and all things we're doing to make sure that all of our students are getting quality, healthy, fresh meals. As well as some of our breakfast and meal initiatives that we have going on. A new pilot called the Comfy Cafe, and some wellness policy goals that we're working on as well. All right, so meal applications continue something that we're striving to encourage parents to complete, as not only supports families by providing them with discounts for after-school programs or athletic events, but also the schools by providing funding for campuses to have more education opportunities for students, as well as school garden days and hiring more teachers. And not only that, students who do qualify to have reduced meals this school year and next school year are able to eat free breakfast with us. So trying to make sure that we're able to feed hungry kids, and the best way to do that is to really push and encourage families to complete that meal application form. And to kind of help with that, we are working really hard to have a meal application event on the 30th, Saturday, 8 a.m. at the Berry Center, where families are able to come in and fill out the form. The application will have the assistance. We'll have Spanish speakers if we need, and more resources with that as well. So we're just really trying to make sure we're able to provide meals for students. So this is the best way to kind of push that. So if you guys can take a picture of it, post it on social media, share it with your family, your friends, your dog, whoever it may be. We're happy to help as many families as we are in the school district. Take your pictures as you please. Okay. So menu updates and food quality continue to be one of our top priorities. I think we can all recognize that sometimes a lot of our students are only eating with us. The only meal that they get is breakfast and lunch in our cafeteria. So we want to make sure that we're striving to provide them with fresh, quality meals that look good, that taste good, so they can have a good experience in the cafeteria. So our lovely chef, who is not here anymore, Carla, has reformulated our cinnamon rolls. And they were a huge hit during that first week of school. If you haven't had them and you work in the school, I highly recommend you go and go find one. They're absolutely amazing. We're working on making sure those pizzas are like crispy, they're cheesy, it's delicious. And then we're also working to have specialty salads that are dropping every month in our cafeteria. So our kids are getting a little bit of everything, which I love. These pictures came from yours truly, our new special marketing and special
communication specialist.
See,
just the last one.
all the things. So she has been working to get pictures and put on social media, on Twitter, so all of our students can kind of see all the new things that we have going on. And again, kind of back to Carla and our chef, she has been working diligently to get new menu items available for students. So I think we'll be dropping a specialty pizza once a month on top of those salads as well and some new muffins. So we got a lot of fun things happening right now. All right, so kind of going into nutrition education, we do have a harvest of the month. If you haven't heard of it, it's something that Texas Department of Agriculture kind of helps promote and puts on, where we are providing schools with a fruit or vegetable that's highlighted for the month. It's usually in season, and we're giving the students the opportunity to sample those items. So I think this month is watermelon. We're also working with our PE teachers to provide them with education material to educate their PE students about the varieties of fruits and vegetables that are available for them, the types of watermelon that are available, whether it's yellow or red. We're providing them with education material where they teach them about why it's important to eat watermelon, or how is this going to help your body and grow. So we're providing a lot of material for our PE teachers to promote education and health and wellness overall in our district. Actually, let me go back there. One more thing. We are also working with TVA to make sure all of the fruits and vegetables that we're providing for our students is locally grown in Texas, which is pretty amazing, I think. I think we sometimes forget that Texas is a pretty good big source of agriculture, not just our fruit and vegetables, but our milk as well. So highlighting that as well. And again, back to some of our nutrition service priorities. Again, quality continues to be one of our main priorities. Again, sometimes these are only meals our students are eating, so being able to provide them with something that's fresh and delicious is super important. Not only that, but healthy. So we have been increasing our scratch meals, everything that's been made in our kitchen. A lot of it is coming from scratch, which is awesome. We're super fortunate to be able to do that. Not many districts are able to do that. They don't have the manpower, they don't have the kitchens, the space to do that. So I think SciFair is super unique in that way by providing students with scratch meals pretty frequently. We're also working to decrease barriers to get students to eat more breakfast with us. Breakfast continues to be something that's difficult to get students to eat with us. For a variety of reasons, it's early, maybe they ate already at home, maybe they're just a little embarrassed to go to the breakfast line in the morning, whatever it may be, right? But that continues to be something that we're striving to encourage students to eat, because research also shows that students who eat breakfast have performed better academically, and they perform better socially with their friends. I mean, have y'all been hangry and just like, it just doesn't work out. So we want to make sure we're working to get our students to eat breakfast with us. Our supervisors, one that's over here, Michelle, put your hand over here. Michelle has been working along with our other six supervisors to go out to campuses, meet with our principals, to kind of just find ways that will help the campus promote breakfast, whether it's they go and they grab their food, so it's a grab-and-go style, or promoting different initiatives like Breakfast in the Classroom for those campuses. And we've also have been meeting with athletics. Susie, our wonderful director over here, worked with me. We worked together to go and meet up with our athletic director, Ronald Patton, to talk about the importance of breakfast and eating in our cafeteria with us. So we're working with athletics to promote healthy eating, to help them be great athletes on field and off field. And then finally, we're working on a new initiative called the Comfy Cafe. It's a pilot program where we have currently two campuses involved, where we're changing the culture around eating in the cafeteria, where they students kind of come in and it's very regimented. It's go sit down, then go through the line, then sit down, eat your food quietly, put your head down, then go back to class. It's very strict, and this is supposed to be a time where we're able to kind of relax and decompress. I'm sure all of you guys take lunch breaks and you're just like, you know, put some music on, maybe watch a little Netflix, chat with my friends. We're trying to make sure that we're able to provide that kind of environment for our students. So we're changing the culture surrounding the cafeteria. So we're trying to encourage students to socialize, to nourish their body with healthy foods, to have conversations with each other, just to make sure that not only are they going to be successful like in school, you know, academically, but just socially as well. Because at the end of the day, they're humans with thoughts and feelings and emotions and needs to be nurtured as well. So this is our Comfy Cafe logo. We are putting together videos where students are able to kind of watch and learn like tips and tricks about why it's important to socialize, learning how to have confidence in yourself, making new friends, and just kind of learning how to be a human, right? Just learn how to navigate all the big emotions and feelings that we have on a daily basis, but definitely something that's difficult for young kids to kind of navigate anyway. I'm human and I have big emotions and they're hard to navigate. All right, I'm gonna turn it over to Emily to talk about some of our goals for the Shack for this year and then for next year.
Okay, so our Shack goals for 23-24, we kind of didn't have written goals to evaluate. So I kind of pulled what we have that's written already in the district improvement plan. And that is to increase school breakfast participation to 30%, which is evaluated in the district improvement plan, and to provide a coordinated school health program, which is also one of the wellness goals in the district improvement plan. And I found in there it said Catch and Fitnessgram. Are we still doing Catch-ish? Okay, we are still doing Catch. Okay. So I kind of wanted to set the stage to talk about our goals for 24-25, because next year, this year we already had to apply for a waiver to on our evaluation. So we do need to have a way to evaluate our wellness policy goals. So funded by the USDA, and the Texas Department of Agriculture has some minimum requirements that we have to meet. So we have to have objectives, benchmarks, and activities to implement the wellness goals, and a method for measuring the implementation of the wellness goals. So the previous two slides, those we can achieve pretty easily just with the district improvement plan. It's stuff that we're already doing. But if we want to achieve any other goals, any other wellness policy goals, then we'll have to kind of beef that up. So I'm suggesting a timeline for us to hit our goals for next year, because we have 4 meetings. So for the 24-25 school year, we'll discuss at this meeting plans for next meeting to create the goals. And then in November, we're going to work on developing the goals. And in February, we need to work on developing the evaluation plan. And in April, we need to finalize it to present it to the school board. So I think that's a timeline that we can handle. So I'm excited to have Sierra here, because she was the chair at Fort Bend ISD of the wellness
nutrition subcommittee.
Okay, the nutrition subcommittee on their Shack. So she does have some Shack experience. But I think that if we can plan on discussing the goals at each meeting, then we should be able to not extend a waiver anymore.
Right.
Okay, so the waiver is over. So we do need to do that this school year. So. Right. So we got audited last year. We had the waiver in place, and that was the last year you could do it. So that's all I have. I think we can talk about what kind of goals we need next week, next month, or whenever month it is.
November.
Yeah, next meeting. So, all right, that's all we have.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Can we have everybody eat lunch real quick? Because Carla said that
that we need to eat now.
Oh, okay.
Because the salad's dressed.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
Is that okay with you, Elaine, or do you need to get, do you need to leave?
Can you eat lunch first, Elaine?
Oh, I can eat
Hi,
lunch.
Hi, Elaine.
And I can stay.
So does everybody want to have lunch? Is that okay with
yes,
you, Christina?
That's fine.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Does everybody want to go through the lunch line first?
Yeah, go ahead.
So I was hoping Carla would be here to tell you what was on the menu, but it looks like chicken sliders and salad and some pickles.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Somebody's got to go first.
If I could have your attention while you continue chewing.
Thank you. We're just trying to be mindful of everyone's time today. Before we break into our physical activity and fitness planning subcommittee, I just wanted to remind you of the dates for our upcoming meetings. And just to remind you that our focus really is about child nutrition, physical health, mental health, and exercise. Those are our goals for our committee. So if you're a part of the subcommittee,
yes.
Please remain. If not, you feel free to continue eating. But I'm going to turn you over to Lee.
Yes, if you would like to be a part of the physical activity subcommittee, you're welcome to come join us at our table while we finish eating. Otherwise, we will see you November 14th.